First, a quick shout out to Yuan Turpin for the great music that you just heard right there. That was a clip from Tycho Knott's Love off of his Rhythm and Beats album. You can find the information for his music down below. All right, welcome to another episode of the Homeroom Podcast. This time it is a bonus episode, just like a bonus level in awesome video games. This is a bonus episode of Homeroom just for you wonderful, beautiful fans out there.
Well, we're not going to Capcom you and make you pay for it.
I haven't decided yet.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I haven't decided yet. Keep your mouth shut. And so in order for this to be an extra special episode, we've decided to, instead of talk about what we have been playing, we are instead going to talk about what we have not been playing because those games suck. For example, I have not been playing any Halo games because I don't like Halo.
Come on.
And whenever I play a shooter, I prefer for someone to die when I shoot them in the face.
That's a valid point.
I have not been playing Halo. Other games I've not been playing include Bioshock or Boring Shock.
Shut your face.
Like to call it. You know, shooting bees from my hands is kind of dumb. I don't really see the appeal in that.
Aren't you? Never mind. Forget it.
Yeah, it's just not even that good. And Bioshock Infinite looks all right. The chick's kind of hot, but it doesn't look like a very good game to me. You know, the graphics are pretty bad. Levine's never made anything that I enjoyed. He's a pretty bad developer. So I've not been playing any Bioshock games. And finally, I have not been playing... I forgot the name of it. It's that... The people that finally finished the amazing Duke Nukem Forever, it's that game they came out with this year.
I didn't know they made one.
Boring Lands, that's what it was. Boring Lands 2. Oh. That game, I could not even get myself to play that game. It's so, so bad. I had to review it for the Coalition. Gary knows I reviewed it. I didn't even play it. I couldn't even get myself to play it. It was bad. So I haven't been playing any of those.
Shocking revelation.
Yep. So what have you guys not been playing?
Just insert the name of any Nintendo game, and that's what I've not been playing.
Well, there's a bit of a backstory here. Mr. Gary Swaby has never beaten a Mario game or Zelda game. I don't think he's even, you know, ever played a Nintendo console in his life.
Well, I'm not surprised he hasn't. Oh, what console did you play?
I owned a NES, but I only had two games for it.
Duck Hunt and Mario?
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
And I didn't own a Super Nintendo, but I had a friend who used to bring it around frequently, so I played a couple games on there. But yeah, I've never beaten a Mario or Zelda game, and I get a lot of stick for that.
Mm. Well... Mario, I'm kind of sad you haven't played enough of those, but Zelda as a franchise pretty much sucks, so you're good on that. Cool. I'm not playing Zelda while Colton hyperventilates over there or whatever he's doing. But no Zelda. I have not been playing a Call of Duty game because I am not a sheep.
You're not a black sheep?
Oh, how
passe. Shut up.
I mean, with Call of Duty, like, the thing is, I know Call of Duty is just a cheap game, and it's the same thing every year, but the reason I play it personally is just because it's so much fun, because, like, all my friends are playing it, and, you know, I know that they're going to be playing it every year, so I buy it every year just to play with them, and it's just fun to play with friends.
Yeah, we'll get back to what you're saying right now in a little bit. I have a bone to pick with you, so...
Okay. Yeah, I'd rather play Battlefield because it's, you know, a better game, so...
Yeah, I agree.
If my friends decide not to buy Battlefield, they're just demoted to my idiot friend list, and we're gonna keep moving forward.
What's it like down there, Colton? Is it lonely, or...?
No, it's just, you know, such stupid people like Stephen Hawking, Einstein, you know... Other stupid people considering his tastes.
There's probably a few people that enjoyed the ending of Mass Effect 3 down there too.
Yeah, like me.
Yeah.
Game of the year.
Woo! That's really cute.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead with your terrible list.
Oh, Wii U. Anything Wii U related, I have not been playing because they look pretty terrible.
That's a lie. You've been playing things that are on the Wii U.
No, I have not.
You haven't played any of the games they've remade, pretty much, which I mean like their entire roster.
I've been playing Darksiders 2, so I guess I've been playing.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, if you're going to count it like that, then I guess I have.
And even though Gary has never beaten a Mario game, he's played New Super Mario Bros. U before because it's the same as every other Mario game he's ever played.
There you go.
Exactly.
Okay, you done with your craptastic list?
I could keep going on for days if you really want this.
No, I'll go ahead and go. I haven't been playing any of those poor people games, you know, like the indie games. Because I have money and good games to buy. I haven't played Journey. It seems like everybody who wants to play Journey is a hipster and just way too full of themselves. So I haven't been doing that. I kind of wish Profex would have named some games that he does like, so I could have just listed those. But, I mean, there isn't too many games I haven't played just because, you know, I have a lot of games. So, I mean, I haven't played, like, any really of the Wii U launch titles like Zombie U or any of that stuff. That looks stupid, but I don't know. Unlike some people, I can buy bad games and still play them. So
that's why you're a Zelda fan?
No, I'm a Zelda fan because I know what a good game is, and I'm not a moron.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, it's getting a little heated there. But I guess one thing I haven't been playing that a lot of people do is I haven't been playing Halo anymore. I'll agree with whoever said that they weren't playing Halo. I don't think the new studio did it a lot of justice for its multiplayer. So
That's strange. I've heard the opposite of that argument.
I feel like I'm
sure you have.
I feel like I'm one of the only people who feel like that Halo 4 wasn't that great.
No, you're definitely not alone in that.
It's strange. But I agree with David. I do get tired of having to empty an entire clip into someone to get one kill.
They have shields.
It's a shocker. The people
you said they have shields.
Yeah.
So two clips then?
Yeah, it's surprising. Us here at PlayStation University aren't huge fans of Halo.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't think about that.
Okay, so let's move on.
Oh, I'm playing Hello Kitty Dance Party.
You have not?
No, I have not.
Oh, you moved on. That's good.
Yeah.
You used to obsess over that.
Yeah.
I did. Well, because, you know, I love the color pink, and I love men. So that game was perfect for me for a long time. But then, you know, taste change.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay, so now to the main topics of our bonus episode. And the reason why we're doing this bonus episode is because these are topics we wanted to cover in the other episode, but kind of got a little long, so we ended up not talking about them. But first, let's talk about a little article that I posted on the site. It's going to be the launch point for this discussion. And the title of my article was, Tomb Raider will not be better, in quotes, better than Uncharted. And some people, I feel like, probably read the title and figured I was just going to rave about Uncharted, how it's amazing, and how Tomb Raider can never top it. But that isn't really what the point of the article was. Instead, it was to talk about people that say that Tomb Raider or Uncharted are objectively better than one another. And I think that those games have quite a few differences that people should look at. So I'm going to be kind of brief so everyone else can get a chance to talk. But first is that I think Uncharted is, you know, a game that's about big set piece moments. It's about, you know, witty dialogue. It's about big epic adventures and that kind of stuff. The Tomb Raider franchise has always been about puzzle solving. It's a much slower pace and that kind of stuff. But this new Tomb Raider has a much grittier feel. It's very survival focused. It, you know, it's a very different tone than anything Uncharted has ever done. So I kind of take issue with people that try to compare the two, because I know that they do have their similarities, and Tomb Raider definitely inspired Uncharted, which was, you know, Tomb Raider was inspired by Indiana Jones and all that kind of stuff. They're related, but I think people should kind of notice their differences. And so what do you guys think about those two franchises and how they're going to interact next year?
Well, I think purely from a sexism view, men are always better than women in every way. So Uncharted is going to be better.
Okay, so yeah, valid
we have
point.
That.
Valid
but we
point.
Do have boobies on the other protagonists, so,
That's a good thing.
I think the sexist chauvinist crowd is just going to have to call it a 50 because men are better, but girls have boobies, so.
Yeah.
Very, very, very good point. So we're deadlocked. Who else has something to contribute?
Well, you said that, you know, Uncharted kind of took its influence from Tomb Raider. I feel like that's kind of been flipped now, because Tomb Raider is clearly taking from Uncharted now. They have the set pieces going on, and, you know, and all that stuff. So, you know, I think it's just been completely reversed, and they're looking at Uncharted and just taking a lot of influence from it.
Yep, the student has become the teacher.
Yeah, that's where all the similarities lie. Because before that, I don't think that they were that closely matched.
No, not really. I guess, like, on paper, you can see that, like, they're both searching for treasure. Well, in the new Tomb Raider, I think she's just searching for a way to get off the island or whatever. But based on the old stuff, it was all very similar, just searching for different artifacts. I think that Uncharted is going to be a lot better because the backstory and the supporting characters are well thought out. Like, it's probably going to be a little unfair to make this comparison, but I'm sure no one can name a supporting character from the Tomb Raider series.
The Butler.
What was his name?
The Butler. His name was The Butler.
His name is The Butler?
Yeah, he's like Butler. Blah, 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 blah.
That's it?
Yeah, he's Butler.
Well, that, the fact that they didn't even name him kind of proves.
Totally making the point for me there. It's like, we just got Lara Croft and the Butler. But, like, you know, Sully is a pretty awesome character, and I think her name is Ellen. I'm messing that up, maybe. But
Lena.
Chloe.
Chloe is pretty awesome. She was in, the second one and the third one?
Barely.
And then, yeah, and then just everything with, like, Sir Francis Drake from the first one, like, tying into a fictional history, it's just so much better. But I think the next Tomb Raider is going to be awesome, but I agree with Gary. They're taking a lot of stuff from Uncharted.
I mean, with that being said, for me personally, the style of game that Tomb Raider looks like it's going to be appeals to me more, because I really dig that kind of personal story, character-driven, you know, tale, as opposed to the big epic set-piece moments that Uncharted's known for. So I think if Tomb Raider can do what it's looking like it's going to do well, I might become more of a Tomb Raider fan than an Uncharted fan.
But why? There is two completely different experiences. You can love.
No,
both.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I'm saying. Like, that style of game is what appeals to me more personally.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and so go on.
I think a big thing for me is just, like, the personalities behind the main, like, protagonist. Nathan Drake is just awesome. I just love his personality through all of the games. He comes across as, you know, a funny guy, an awesome guy, while Lara Croft has been more of, like, just this, like, kick-ass girl. Like, this girl, you know, kicks a lot of butt and, you know, is tough as nails and stuff like that. And I find her character to be a lot more, like, two-dimensional rather than Nathan Drake, which has all these, you know, little nuances in his personality, which, you know, comes from, you know, starting with a later generation.
Yeah, Lara Croft is kind of that cookie cutter, super awesome chick. While Nathan is a everyman type of guy.
Yeah, I mean, it comes to what I said earlier. I mean, her boob, like, I was joking, but of course her, like, boobs were, like, like a main part of her character back then, you know, starting from when they were like these jagged like things you could cut your hands on and put your eyes out until like now that they're, you know, softer and stuff like that. But I mean, that's been, you know, kind of Lara Croft for a long time in a lot of people's eyes. While Nathan had to, you know, play more on that, you know, homey kind of personality.
True.
I mean, he's a total bro.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I'm, you know, much more a fan of Nathan Drake's character because of who he is. And, you know, the only reason I'm actually interested in Lara's character in this new game is because she's so hot.
Yeah.
That's simply it.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job of, instead of making her look like the exaggerated poster girl for hot game chicks, she looks realistic now. In a very gritty way, she looks, you know, like, I mean, just like even her voice is just mesmerizing in the trailers. I can't wait to play the game just to play as her.
But that emulate being, real life.
Yeah, very true. I mean, it's like it looks like it's going to be a pretty dark game as far as the content of what goes on. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, but to summarize my thoughts on it, I don't think that, you know, one game will specifically be better than the other. I just feel like that, you know, both games kind of balance each other out, but, you know, everybody should enjoy both because at the end of the day, they are two different experiences.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about Tomb Raider is it's going to be multi-platform too. So, I mean, people on PC and 360 can play it as well. Yeah. And so I think it'll be kind of cool. So, I don't know, maybe this is wishful thinking as the dean of PS Uni, but if someone enjoys Tomb Raider and they never played that style or genre of game, maybe they'll pick up a PS3 and play Uncharted.
There you go.
Maybe. I don't know. Also, something else that's recently happened, speaking of Tomb Raider, is they have confirmed that there will be multiplayer.
What?
Yeah.
So it has to happen. It's a new game. That's what they do.
Right. So I kind of wanted to talk about putting multiplayer in games that don't need it. I think that, you know, some games have been improved by adding a multiplayer component, and, you know, maybe you would have never thought about it. One example that comes to mind for me is GTA 4. I loved the multiplayer in that game, but I never really imagined enjoying it. But they did it so well that I liked it. But
really? You thought they did it well?
Yeah, there were so many game modes, and it was such a big open world. It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, for me personally, multiplayer is starting to become a bit of a turnoff. I mean, there are some games that are perfect for multiplayer, like, you know, first-person shooters, Call of Duty, Battlefield, you know, those type of games are perfect. And fighting games, you know, stuff like that, racing games. But when you're putting it into, like, third-person action games and stuff like that, it just really starts to annoy me. Because it's like it's like developers feel like it should be in every game. Or I think it's more the publishers than the developers.
Yeah, I agree, because I think a lot of it has to do with people or developers wanting to sell those online passes.
Because, or map packs, too.
Yeah.
Like, additionally down the road.
Because, you know, if with the rise of used game sales, you know, if someone were to buy a used single-player game, that developer and publisher don't get any of that money. But if it's, you know, for example, if someone bought the new God of War used, there's probably going to be an online pass with it. So they're going to have to pay extra money just to play multiplayer.
So, yeah, exactly. Like, Mass Effect 3, for example, like, the only reason they put multiplayer in that game is so they can sell you an online pass. That's the only purpose that multiplayer serves.
It was fun, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was slightly fun, but it didn't need to be there.
But, I mean, the fact that they had to go back and edit the ending and add on to it kind of proves that if multiplayer wasn't there and they could have devoted all their resources to the single player, maybe that game would have been better.
Eureka.
Yeah, but I don't think that, like, this is, like, something, one of those things that, like, doesn't really... Like, we can complain about it and stuff like that, but they're never going to change it. Because besides from just getting, like, online passes, it gives them more things to sell to people. and it gives their game like another dimension to try to keep people playing it. So
right.
No publisher is going to be like, well, we can, you know, devote all of our attention to actually making this game super awesome, or we can, you know, have this online pass, and then we can have like 6 map packs down the road. Then we can give them weapon packs, and then we can, you know, charge them for health and ammo, you know. So
yeah, and I think one benefit that a lot of people don't really think about is, you know, what if someone pretty much only buys games to play multiplayer? But maybe the game had a tacked on multiplayer mode that wasn't very good, but before that person traded in the game, they decided to try the single player and ended up loving the game.
I don't think that's going to happen with the games that we're talking about, though.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not that likely. But speaking of, you know, tacked on multiplayer and good single player, there's one game specifically that I want to talk about. I haven't played the game yet. I heard really good things. I know Charles loves it. It's Spec Ops: The Line. And after that game came out, people, you know, weren't really big fans of the multiplayer mode, but they loved the single player. It's supposed to have an amazing story, good twists, lots of good characters, and all that kind of stuff. And after the game came out, in an interview, or maybe not an interview, but some quotes that they were speaking to Polygon, one of the main developers for the game, Corey Davis, he was the lead designer, he had some stuff to say about the multiplayer mode. The game was published by 2K, and he said that they were determined to have it anyway. It was literally a checkbox that the financial prediction said that we needed, and 2K was relentless in making sure that it happened, even at the detriment of the overall project and of the perception of the game. He said that it turned into a low-quality Call of Duty clone in third person, calling it tacked-on multiplayer and bullshit which should not even exist.
Ow, wow.
He said there's no doubt that it's an overall failure. It sheds a negative light on all of the meaningful things that we did in the single player, and it was a waste of money. No one is playing it. He said it doesn't even feel like a part of the overall package. It's another game rammed into the disc like a cancerous growth, threatening to destroy the best things about the experience that came from the team at Jaeger and they put their heart and souls into creating.
I hear him all of that. I agree.
That was insane, man. That guy was real.
That was pretty intense. Like,
yeah. He went in on them.
I mean, that he had to work on that stuff, so I can understand him being pretty pissed because, you know, David, you haven't played it yet, but once you go through the single player, you'll see how much work they really put into that game, and you'll probably, you know, relate more to the statements that he's making because, man, the departure from the single player to the multiplayer is ridiculous.
Can I ask for something real fast? Like, this is weird, though, because you say that the single player is so great.
Yes.
And the guy said that he didn't want to do the multiplayer.
Correct.
That it was forced. And then you're saying that the multiplayer was bad. Well, that kind of like I don't understand. Like if they didn't want to do it, of course it was bad. Like if it was just a checklist that they were forced into doing it, then of course they were rushed and they didn't put a lot of effort into it. So of course it's going to be bad. And it seems that even though they spent time on it, it wasn't enough to like be a detriment to the single player. So I don't really get why it's such a terrible thing. I mean, it might not be that great, but if it's just something extra, the normal game is so great still, then it obviously didn't take too much away, and it's there, you know, in case someone does want to play it.
But then look at what David was saying. What if somebody went into it because it had multiplayer and it was a multiplayer shooter? If that was the first thing that they tried, then they're going to have a sour taste in their mouth no matter how good the single player is. They're probably not even going to want to go through it.
What if it didn't have multiplayer? Then that person wouldn't buy the game to begin with. At least they buy the game. I just don't get it, because if you think the multiplayer sucks, but you're a multiplayer gamer and you buy the game, then you at least like have exposure to the game that you wouldn't have previously.
Well, if I'm the publisher, then I probably am two thumbs up, cheesing, like, oh, this is awesome, screw you, multiplayer suck, you still bought it. But as a consumer, I'd be pissed. That's just me.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, I mean, you would if it's a game that you wouldn't buy normally because it had this multiplayer, and if it, like, the multiplayer was not, like, the focus of the game, if you did any research, you would probably know that, and you'd probably know to stay clear. So, I mean, I'm just looking at it from, like, the point of, like, the development of the game. If the developer doesn't want to do it, and they do a subpar job, that isn't necessarily an indictment of having it. And it shows that you can have a good single player and have this tacked on thing as well.
Well, consider there's probably a large group of people that buy games off of the reviews that they hear from other people. When the game is reviewed, people don't split it up to this is the score for the single player and this is the score for the multiplayer very often, if at all. They're going to give you an overall score, and that multiplayer is going to lower that score.
Well, I mean, if a person is just going off of, like, if they scroll down the text and just look at the score, then, I mean, that's on them anyway.
A lot right? of people do that. I know, would say but most still, people do that.
Still, I mean, that's kind of cheap when they read a red and it says, like, it has a wonderful multiplayer. Just play the, I mean, single player, just play the single player. I don't know. It just seems, like, weird because this is, like, supposed to be an indictment of the multiplayer when it shows, like, hey, you know, you have a good single player and, you know, this bad multiplayer was from a publisher who obviously didn't want to do it. So maybe if they were, you know, a little more passionate about it, it would have been good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes both ways. It's just kind of, you know, a question about what you look for in a game and doing your homework on what a game includes.
I mean, I just don't, I'm always for more content when I buy a game. So if it has multiplayer added without taking away from the single player, I can't see how that would ever be bad as a gamer who just likes more stuff. I mean, even if it's subpar, you still have a good part of the game. So I don't know. I just think more is better. So
well, I mean, looking, the people that are in this podcast right now are more than likely people that are going to do their research before they get the game, not go solely off of whatever score they see, because a lot of us, all of us, write some of these scores anyway. I knew how terrible the multiplayer was before I bought Spec Ops, but I still bought it knowing that I was going to enjoy the single player. But your average person is not going to do that, though. And I think forcing them to tack that on, lowering the overall score, just hurts the collective project.
I think it seems like more of a terrible, like, how reviewing games, how, like, the reviews for games are terrible when they make people just look at a score and, like, okay, I'm not getting it. I'm not going to read anything about the game. I'm just going to look at a score. That may be what they do, but that's probably bad.
You know what?
And I don't think that just people's bad being, like, poor investigators and researchers about what games they like necessarily should be an indictment of whether or not we should have extra content in, like, the form of multiplayer for single player games. Well,
you know what? I'll say this then. I think without that multiplayer tack on, Spec Ops would have been in a lot more Game of the Year conversations.
I don't know. I haven't played it.
Just by really hearing you talk, I think I need to buy that game now, just by hearing you talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to play it. All right, so, I mean, clearly there are two different opinions on the subject, so we definitely want to hear your thoughts on whether or not you like multiplayer to give you more content, or if you want your games that should be single player to just stay single player, and just let us know down below and kind of give your thoughts on the topic. We have one other subject we're going to talk about, and this is, once again, probably going to be another divisive one. We're going to talk about developer loyalty. And we're going to talk about, you know, buying games based on brand name, based on developer name, based on a history of quality, even if you know that it's not that good anymore. And one of the main things that comes to mind are, like, games, franchises nowadays that have tons of sequels. So, you know, you think of Call of Duty, you think of, for example, Final Fantasy. We talked about that a little bit. How, you know, people buy games because of the franchise they're a part of or because of the developer that made it. But maybe those games aren't really games that they should be buying because they know that they're not going to be that good, but they buy them anyway just to, you know, play with people or just because they hope that the developer improves, that kind of stuff. And I had this discussion with Colton the other day. So what do you guys think? Like, do you think that that's part of what's wrong with the industry, that people buy games just because, you know, oh, it's Call of Duty, so I'm going to buy it every year? Like, or do you think that, I mean, is that a good or a bad thing, though? Because, I mean, some game franchises are really good and they do deserve that kind of loyalty. So what's the difference, though? So, like, where should the line be drawn? Where, you know, for example, you said you bought Final Fantasy 13 too, even though you didn't like the first one and you weren't that interested in the second one.
First, before I get into that, I'll say that the last time that I truly bought a game solely off of, like, other friends buying it and their kind of loyalty was Call of Duty World at War. And it was because, you know, everybody was going to be online playing it, but it was so bad that I traded it in the next day. And that was kind of like the end of my whole veil of Call of Duty blindness crap. But with 13-2, the series of events with that was I bought 13 without doing as much research because of the brand loyalty. So, yeah, I'm at fault on that. And I ended up being disappointed. But when I did 13-2, a lot of the problems that I had with 13, a lot of people that played 13-2 said were fixed. Like, 13 was very linear, and they said that 13-2 was very open. The additional Pokemon-like character collection was in there, which is intriguing to me because I'm a big fan of the whole Persona series. So
we can agree on.
Yeah, and there was a lot of game loyalty in the decision, because if I wasn't a huge fan of Final Fantasy, I probably would have been so pissed at 13, I just left it alone completely and been done with it. Just like when I dropped the Call of Duty thing. Because after that one game, you know, it only took that one game for me to be like, all right, I'm just going to play other first-person shooters and not give them my money anymore. And I was good to go on that without, you know, giving it a second thought. But outside of those two, oh, and sports games, I think, thrive off of that sheep mentality, because people have been buying Madden. Ooh. And, yep. You know, like, I think FIFA actually makes moves forward for the most part, but Madden, seriously, for a good 4, 5, 6 years, nothing changed. As a matter of fact, the first next generation Madden going into PS3 and Xbox.
Oh, so bad.
It took away, you know, more than half of the game's content and modes from the old game, but it still sold like it was just going to be amazing. The scores on games like Madden, NCAA, Call of Duty will not matter at all. People are going to buy them anyway.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it kind of goes both ways, like you're saying, that people sometimes can be so disgusted with an entry in a series that it turns them off from the whole franchise, yeah. Which is kind of bad, because what if, you know, the next entry is actually really good? And then it also goes the other way, where some people will buy a game because it's part of it has a name on the front of the box, and they will just buy, you know, any game that's made by that developer or published by that person, or not buy. And so,
which interestingly, after World at War, Modern Warfare 2 came out, but I didn't buy it at launch. I got it much, much later, like when it was really cheap. And I don't know. Y'all might see it as different, but if I wait for a game to be cheap and I get it used, I don't really see that as a loyalty thing. Like, I don't know. If I don't get it at launch, I don't care. I can just wait.
Yeah, just bouncing off of the Final Fantasy thing, like, there's an interesting point I found. With Final Fantasy 13, I think because it was dumbed down so much, there was a lot of people who have wanted to play Final Fantasy game, but they found it too complex, that decided to get into Final Fantasy 13.
True,
and liked it. So I think that was kind of like a reversed brand loyalty type of thing, because it actually got a lot of people into the franchise that, you know, before that game didn't want to play it.
And, you know, I actually hated those people.
But because, the thing is,
yeah.
The thing is, on the flip side, Final Fantasy 13-2, I think the people who bought that game were only the original brand loyalists, because I don't think too many, you know, casual people on the fence bought 13-2. Right. I think that was mostly brand loyalty. But yeah, go ahead. What was you saying?
I was going to say, I hated the people that enjoyed 13, because a lot of people that enjoyed it were people that I worked with that had never played a Final Fantasy game before. So I was like, how dare you enjoy 13? This is not a representative of what Final Fantasy is. Like, these other games were so much better, but you like this crap. I was just like, I couldn't believe it. But now that you say that about 13 too, I'm like, maybe that's a good plan. They have 13, which is watered down, and it draws people in that weren't interested, and then they drop 13 too to kind of bring back the loyalists. So you have people that just started 13 that enjoyed it get 13 too, and then you have the people that wanted the old stuff that bought it because of brand loyalty, and then they bought 13 too because it was like the old games. So you bought, you know, you reeled in both of those crowds.
Yeah, exactly.
That shows how it's a abusive relationship between loyal people who are loyal to a publisher and then the publisher itself. Because there are people like people who went into 13 wanting that kind of style, were incredibly disappointed but bought it because they were loyal to it. And so the publisher was like, well, hey, these people are going to buy it anyway, so we'll just dumb it down. We'll get a big casual appeal, and there's nothing that they can do because they're just going to keep buying our games. Yeah. And even going back and trying to fix it and making it more just like shows that it's a very abusive relationship. I'm kind of afraid that that's going to happen with Dark Souls too, because when they're talking about, you know, streamlining it and making it easier and getting more people, you really – you know, alienate your fans, but your fans still love the other game so much that they're going to stay, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, but hold up on that note, though, because I looked into that a little bit more about the Dark Souls game, and he clarified that they'll be in the opening stages of the game, which, you know, if you're super loyal to, you'll still be pissed by this, but I felt a little bit better about it. In the opening stages, there'll kind of be a little bit of a learning period. But after that, very soon after that, it opens up into your normal Dark Souls. You're screwed. You're going to die every few seconds world.
That's not how Dark Souls works, though.
No, it's not. But I felt better about that as opposed to making the entire game accessible.
I guess so. But like, what's difficult about Dark Souls is that it doesn't tell you very much. So you have to grow and learn. I mean, once you know what you're doing and how to parry and all this other stuff and like how to do all the things in the game's challenge drops significantly. And
no,
when he's talking
not.
About, oh, well, at least it did to me, and I don't think I'm a very good gamer. But it drops significantly when you know everything that you're doing. Also, when he talked about streamlining, the guy specifically said that he likes things to be more straightforward in terms of story. And the beautiful thing about like Dark Souls lore and games that are more hardcore is they don't just come out and directly tell you like this guy is this and this guy is that. They try to weave it into the universe. So you kind of like grow and learn and figure it out while you do it, which is a lot more satisfying.
Yeah, I didn't know he was changing the story stuff, so that'll bother me, because that was one of the more unique aspects of the game. Even when I played Demon's Souls, I felt that way. Like, learning about the characters along the way was pretty awesome.
Yeah, having to use item descriptions, really, to learn and stuff. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, plus you, like, and it was a really rewarding experience when you meet, like, a character and you think, you know, they're good or they're bad, and it completely flips on you, and I don't know. It's an incredible experience. I hope they don't completely ruin it.
And I want to bring up one other thing on this topic while we're talking about going from, you know, one game to another and whether or not, you know, they simplify versus complicate stuff. One series that comes to mind definitely is Mass Effect. First game was, you know, the most complex of the three as far as character development, the RPG mechanics, all that kind of stuff goes. You know, in two, they got rid of the inventory altogether. There was no inventory. The powers and different like skills and character development choices were a lot simpler, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people are upset about that. I thought Mass Effect 2 was great. I think it's the best of the three if you look at each in a vacuum.
Easily.
Yeah, I love that game. But I do think, you know, a lot of people were kind of worried about the direction it was taking. And you kind of see that more in Mass Effect 3. Where they, you know, they have an entire game mode where you can play action mode and not have to make any choices. I mean, that wasn't how the final game was, because you could still play the traditional way, but it was kind of a signal, I thought. And
Well, and the opposite, where you can just, like, play, make the choices and not play the game.
Yeah, that's true. They kind of had the polar opposite as well. I don't know. I think that in some ways, I'm not sure if it's because of EA or BioWare made those decisions themselves, but I do feel like, kind of like what you hinted on in your casualization article, is that, you know, a lot of developers and publishers are pandering to that audience that likes simplified stuff after they already have an established hardcore base. Like with Mass Effect 1, you know, that game drew in the people that loved sci-fi, loved RPGs, loved epic games. Then, you know, Mass Effect 2 and 3 were a little bit simpler. And I don't know, it seems like, you know, for example, I know in an interview, one of the designers for Mass Effect had said how they, whenever they were developing Mass Effect 3, they looked at Gears of War, Halo, Call of Duty, all of those kind of games for inspiration on how to draw in more gamers. So, I don't know. I mean, it's just a lot of people, like Mass Effect, I'm happy I bought all three of them. It's one of my, it's probably my favorite game trilogy ever. But I think...
Just kidding.
Of all time?
Yeah, I can't think of a trilogy.
I would totally agree with David.
I can't think of another trilogy that I liked more.
That is... It's difficult. Uncharted, actually, I possibly enjoy more. It's hard, though, because of it's two different genres, so it's really hard to compare.
I don't really think it's that hard. I mean, you're comparing a trilogy as, you know, a trilogy as one whole experience to another trilogy as a whole experience. And for me, like, I love the Uncharted games, but Uncharted 2 is so much better than 1 and 3 that it's just, like, I don't know, the whole trilogy itself, I didn't feel like was incredible. Like, they're great games, but...
See, that's the thing. I think it was. There was the difference between Uncharted and Mass Effect. There wasn't an Uncharted game that disappointed me or an ending that disappointed me or even a point in the games that was like...
I would say there's some stuff in the third game that disappointed me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Like what?
One thing is they opened up a whole lot of plot points that they never resolved, which made it annoying to me. For example, well, these are spoilers if you haven't played, if you're listening. For example, they revealed that Nathan Drake probably isn't actually Nathan Drake, that he's been lying about who he is. Second is the backstory on him and Sully was really great to learn about. But it's getting kind of old that they keep faking stuff happening. Like the first game, he died but didn't die. Third game, he died but didn't die. Third is that the relationship between him and Elena, while it is progressing, it seems like every single game follows the same formula where Drake meets Elena halfway through the game for no reason. They fall in love all over again and end up together at the end. And then the next game, it's like they don't know each other and they meet each other halfway through again. It's kind of a disconnect that there's no ongoing relationship between them, and we don't know what the passage of time was or what happened between the two games. I mean, every game follows that same formula, pretty much. And so it got repetitive to me.
I don't know.
Mass Effect is so interlinked from game to game that it really fills out the trilogy more than other games like that, since each step in along the round kind of like carries over and you get to see that. At least to me, that's why I really like it as a trilogy, like as a whole.
The ending really hurt it probably more for me than it did for y'all, clearly. Like, I can't get over how disappointing that aspect was.
I mean, it disappointed me, but it didn't take away from the moment I had during the trilogy. Like, even if the ending was disappointing, it doesn't change the way I felt when, you know, Thane died in my game. Or when Morden sacrificed himself in my game.
Or when I had to shoot Morden. Oh.
You had to shoot him?
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I had to shoot him. I was so upset. Well, I wasn't going to cure the Genophage. They're evil. And, like, violent. They're evil, violent race. I couldn't do that.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
goodness.
I couldn't, and I know, I hated having to kill him. That sucked.
They are not evil.
Or letting Tally die, I hated that. Spoilers, but...
No,
man,
I almost shed a tear.
I could have cried when that happened.
Yeah, I could have cried too. But I hate the Koryans so much. They were such jerks that entire game that I couldn't side with them. Ugh. But see, it's stuff like that happens in a game that I care so much about, which, you know... Which makes me like it, so.
And also, I think the fact that the ending was so divisive and that you do feel so passionately about the disappointment you had, that kind of proves how much you love the trilogy. Like, the fact that you were so invested that you actually hate the ending.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'll think about it more.
Well, you know, Dragon Age 3 isn't out yet, so I can't disagree with David.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I can't wait. I really hope they turn it around.
I'm still playing through the second one now.
I'm still playing through the first one. I never finished it.
Oh, weird. It's crazy because I used to be like in love. I won't say butt buddies because you'd probably edit it out. But I was in love with BioWare. Everything they made to me, like What's Touched by Gold, like Jade Empire, Neverwinter Nights, like everything they made was so great. And then it seemed like the longer they're in this partnership with EA, the more I just kind of like go, ugh. And I no longer just would buy anything they made. So
why did we not?
Maybe fatigue is getting. Maybe like loyalty fatigue is starting to set in for some people. And I don't know why they wouldn't make another Jade Empire. It was great. It has never had a game that was like an Asian like kung fu fighting game that was also an RPG. It was very original and just hasn't like been seen again. So
there's a crap load of free to play MMOs from Korea that are based on that.
Yeah,
so you could jump on that if you want.
Nope.
I need to try some.
Nine Dragons is supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Are y'all feeling any fatigue for y'all, like for some of the like you know brands that you love so much?
Final Fantasy. Just because Final Fantasy 13 and 14. Like I was excited for 14.
Oh, that MMO.
Yeah, and it like man, talk about crash and burn. It was horrible. It's so bad that they had to like end it and start it over.
You apparently didn't have it didn't open with a mail system. What kind of MMO doesn't have a mail system?
Dude, it was terrible. And like I was so invested in that idea and then it just happened and I was like that on top of 13 just made me like wish that Suikoden would come back with something and save my life. But I can hold on to Persona. Persona's always there for me.
How about you, Gary? Any developer you're thinking about giving up on if they keep going in a certain direction?
It would have to be BioWare and, you know, yeah. Final Fantasy as well. I'm with Charles on that.
Yeah.
Okay, Squeeze. I'm going to politely ask Charles to not say anything until I'm done talking on this next point. Because I know he's going to want to chime in.
Oh, good.
Okay. Zelda is my favorite franchise of all time. But pretty much everything that Nintendo has, they do exactly what we're talking about. They, you know, for Mario, for example, they produce the same game over and over and over. There isn't a whole lot of advancement in any of those games. I think that Zelda is, they do make advancements, but I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag for me where I want something specific that I imagine in my mind where it's like the most amazing Zelda ever made. But those things that I have in my head are things that have been done before, but just in a better way. But then at the same time, I'm kind of tired of the same formula for the most part. And I don't really like some of the things they did in Skyward Sword. I feel like they could have been done better. So, I don't know. It's kind of a mixed thing for me with Zelda, where it's my favorite franchise. I love it. I played all of the console games. I love all of them. But at the same time, I feel like I hope for something grand and amazing, but I'm not so sure since it's Nintendo.
Am I okay to speak now?
Yes, yes.
Okay, how do they not understand that their departures from their typical formula are the most successful? Mario Sunshine and Luigi's Mansion being examples of that. They were, you know, huge departures and advancements from the usual cookie-cutter thing, and they were great. Great scores, great sales, the whole nine, but then they go back to the usual crap.
Well, I'll tell you exactly why. You can continue, but I'll tell you exactly why pretty much they follow the same thing.
No, that's pretty much all I needed to say about that.
Oh, okay. I think that, like, I have so much love for Zelda as a series from, like, my childhood, and it has so much nostalgia for me that I'll always kind of be a fan. But I think the problem with it is that they base every innovation, like literally, you know, the whole Wii U controller and everything was supposed to be based around their new Zelda game. Skyward Sword was based around like the motion controls and stuff like that. And so they focus on the gimmicks when they do something like Zelda. And I think that always is going to put less attention to innovation in other realms and more about just how to incorporate that gimmick, because that's what they do every single time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, before we finish, there was one franchise that I wanted to bring up, not because I'm tired of it, but because I feel like I will get tired of it. Little Big Planet, I love those games a lot, actually. It's one of my favorite franchises on PS3, period. But the thing is, I feel like there's not many ways they can top themselves right now. So I feel like if they keep going, bringing out those games, that eventually it's going to get tired. So I kind of want them to stop before it gets too slow.
I think you're getting ahead of yourself, though. Because, all right, they've done, you know, Little Big Planet 1 and 2, and then karting. The next one is probably going to be a big step, because we'll see what direction they're going to go in. But what if they came out with a FPS that of the vein of Time Splitters? With as much the ability to create the levels and the weapons and just all that kind of stuff and the characters, would you not be satisfied then?
So what, like Little Big Planet first person shooter game where it's just like centered around FPS, like, that kind of
yes,
that kind of
totally out of left field.
No, it doesn't have to be like Little Big Planet. It can be just by the same developers or whatever.
I don't know. It seems like being more like, what if my unicorn grew wings and I could fly around on it? Seems like a huge departure that they would just randomly think up, you know?
I think they could take the whole play, create, share into other genres, and I hope they do.
Yeah, they could definitely do that. They could take the concept of Little Big Planet and, you know, make it really good. But, I mean, as far as making Little Big Planet games, I feel like there's not much further they can go with it.
That's possible. We'll see. I hope they don't tank it.
I have one more thing I'd like to like maybe add to the end of the podcast. What sequel would you look forward to the most out of any game ever? Like if you could see a next part in any series, which would you like to see?
Does Final Fantasy VII Remake count as a sequel? No.
Sure. I mean, just pretty much any, like, remake or anything like that. I would like to, you know, just get into that. It's just, like, just name it. I mean, we don't need to go deep into it.
I'll go.
Okay.
Zelda HD Collection.
Oh, God.
I would buy a Wii U. Speaking of developer and brand loyalty, if they re-released Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker, and Majora's Mask in HD, I would buy a Wii U instantly to play that.
For the record, Ocarina of Time is the only Zelda I actually played and enjoyed, just so you guys know.
Well, that's fine. Have you played Link to the Past?
I tried it and didn't enjoy it.
Well, which one? We both said different games.
Links to the Past or whatever.
What about Majora's Mask?
No.
Majora's Mask just seemed like more of the goodness to me.
Yeah, I understand it was more similar to Ocarina of Time. It's just, I don't know. I didn't get into it. I watched people play it, and it just wasn't appealing.
That's fair.
And so then Link to the Past, I didn't like that play style, like, for any game back then.
How about you, Gary?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
Any continuation or remake in a series, what would you like to see? You know, we're just going to throw one out.
So a series from the past?
Yeah, or it can be a series that's already over now.
Wow. Off the top of their head, I can't think of anything. But I know there probably is something. Probably Shenmue or something like that.
Oh, snap! Yes!
Because let's be real, they're never going to make Shenmue 3. So I think they should just like remake the whole franchise.
That gives me another idea then. Instead of Zelda Trilogy, Legend of Dragoon 2.
There you go.
That's my choice.
I was actually going to say that.
Final Fantasy can die, and if I have Legend of Dragoon 2, I'm happy.
There you go.
No, I don't want Final Fantasy to die.
Well, I don't want Final Fantasy to die, but I love Legend of Dragoon. I would love to see a new one.
Yes.
All right. Well, I won't say Final Fantasy VII Remake because that's just, it's not going to happen, but I would like another Chrono game.
A Chrono Trigger?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Oh, that would be cool.
Because it did Cross, and that was pretty good.
Surprisingly, it was really good, yeah. I owned Chrono Cross and Legend of Dragoon at the same time. And
yeah, I'm looking at the PS1 cases on my shelf right now. I have both.
Nice. I stopped playing Dragoon because I got so enthralled with Chrono Cross.
Dragoon's better.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It's a fact.
No. So bad. So much bad taste sometimes, man. I don't understand how it's possible.
Now, Cross is... I can see why you would like Cross more. It's a matter of taste, but I like Dragoon better. It's my favorite turn-based RPG
ever. What? Seriously?
Yeah. That game, it's a lot of it is nostalgia for me, but yeah, definitely.
Have you ever played the Suikoden series?
Nope.
You need to play Suikoden 3.
Nope.
I wouldn't say, I'm not saying that it's going to take over Legend of Dragoon because that's from two different eras, but if you enjoyed that, then you'll enjoy Suikoden 3.
I guess since David took mine with Dragon's Dragon 2, I'd really like to see a new Infamous game. That'd be cool. To borrow a little more. Yeah, I loved Infamous. It was the best comic. I mean, it wasn't based on a real comic character, but he was a comic book character. It was my favorite comic book game ever made. I loved Infamous. So I would
I'm going to go out and say right here that I think Uncharted 2 is an amazing game in and of itself. But if I had to pick Uncharted series or Infamous, I would choose Infamous.
What the crap?
It's
wonderful.
It's awesome, man.
Personally,
I disagree with that, but I can, you know, I wouldn't argue if you said that.
I mean, they're both good franchises, so it's a win-win, but I can't take Infamous over Uncharted, though, because Infamous becomes fairly repetitive pretty quickly.
So does Uncharted.
See, I don't think it gets repetitive, to be honest. I don't think it gets repetitive because you unlock a lot of a lot of the strongest powers later on in the game, and that kind of keeps you wanting to play. And there's a lot of side stuff to do in the game, and it never gets old.
The side stuff is repetitive. It's the same exact stuff every time.
Did you play Infamous 2?
I beat both.
Well, Infamous 2, they had totally every side mission was different.
Yeah.
Every side mission was not different.
You're thinking of the first game where they had the same templates like four or five different kind and you would
I just finished Infamous 2 like 2 months ago.
Oh, I'm really confused then because I remember the exact opposite.
How are the side missions all different?
Because they have like different side missions based on good or evil. They have the other side missions as well. Player created content. There's like a whole different. All different kinds of missions to do.
What? Boom. And I played through as a good person. What was the difference on the bad side that was not on the good side?
I mean, I only played through it on the bad side, but every side mission was a different experience for the most part. There weren't, like, any repetitions, really, from what I remember.
And while we're on the subject of Infamous, I feel like that's one of the most underrated franchises out right now.
That I can agree with. And I don't even understand why it is, honestly. Because it even jumped into the whole vampire thing, which was popular at that time. Which I never played that, by the way. The vampire...
I haven't either.
Me neither. I have it from Plus, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, I missed it when it was on Plus.
Alright, well, anyways, this was supposed to be a short bonus episode. It turned into a full episode, so you're welcome. So we're going to go ahead and cut it off here. We talked about a lot of different topics that I'm sure everyone's passionate about, such as Charles's bad taste in games. So if you want to comment on any of those topics or anything, just go ahead, feel free to do that down below. And also, go ahead and answer Colton's question. If you could continue on one franchise tomorrow, if there could be a new release in a franchise that you love, what would it be? And you can tell us that down below. So, once again, this has been the Homeroom Podcast at PlayStation University, and thanks for listening. I will now leave you with a little bit more from Taikonauts Love by Jan Turpin off of his Rhythm and Bits album. Once again, that information is found right down below. Thanks for listening.